Okay, Kiseitse. Very interesting parsha because it really includes a lot of stuff, and we can't cover all of it, but we are going to cover a big chunk of it because one of the most interesting mitzvos in the Torah is the beginning of the parsha. Interesting because of how it, at least Rashi, sort of presents it to us. Welcome, Judy, welcome back. Good to have you back. We ran out of sheets, though, so you're going to have to share Marsha's offering. So, Kiseitse l'melchama l'aveicha. So, obviously, the beginning of the parsha is talking about war. So, you first of all, anyone who lanes, not that it's relevant to anyone in here, you have to make sure you're reading the right Kiseitse. I was at a minyan this Monday morning. The Baal Kori started reading Kiseitse, realized he was reading the wrong one. The end of last week's parsha also has a whole section which starts Kiseitse l'melchama. And so you have to close the Sefer Torah, you have to say all the brachos again. Wow. Welcome. So you got to make sure. Not as bad as what happened a few months ago when I was in Kansas at a bar mitzvah boy. And he didn't know any better. So he opened up the Torah, it wasn't in the right spot. And he just laned the entire first aliyah by heart. He didn't read any of the words. He read the whole thing by heart. And then the levy came up, and ideally you're supposed to know where you're making a bracha on. So the levy goes and asks the kid, like, where's the aliyah? Like, I don't see the words here. He's like, oh, I don't know. And they're like, what do you mean you don't know? You just laned the whole first aliyah. And so he says, no, the Rishon, who's standing next to me, because I was the gabbai, he said, no, he read the whole thing by heart. And I'm like, why didn't you tell him that he's supposed to read? Anyways, we had to go back, do the entire aliyah again, and then we get the levy again. It's all a mess. Either way, that's for Baal Koris to worry about. And for us, this is, but the point for us is that this is really a continuation of last week's theme, which is, thank you, I finally have my backup back. It's good, my backup recorder. But this week's theme is really a continuation of last week's theme. So what happened at the end of last week's parsha? So the end of last week's parsha was very much about what happens at a time of war and you have to knock down a tree, right? You remember this about Tashkas. What happens at a time of war when you find a corpse on the ground? At least that's the way some commentaries explain it. That's why those two parshas are next to each other. Because you find someone who passed away and you don't know which city he belongs to, etc. The Egla Rufa. So here the parsha picks up with Kiseitse l'melchama l'aveicha again, but this is for a different halacha. This halacha, wow, I should have made more sheets. Mirat Hashem, next week I will bring more. And when it comes to this situation, so this mitzvah is about something someone called a yefas toar. What's is that the name of it? The lady here, it says ishes yefas toar, but that doesn't really explain the situation. Right? Yefas toar just means that she looks beautiful, but it really means a woman who's been taken captive at a time of war. You're at a time of war, you see a beautiful woman, and you want to marry that woman. Right, so if you look, the pasuk tells us in 10:46, right at the beginning of the parsha, Kiseitse l'melchama l'aveicha unesano Hashem elokecha biyadecha v'shavisa shivyo, and it's a time where you're taking into yourself captives, right? V'ra'isa b'shivya, and part of the captives are eshes yefas toar, a beautiful woman, v'chashaktava v'lakachta l'cha l'isha, and you really want, you desire her, and you marry her. So what's interesting, first of all, I have to look this up. I was going to look it up before, but Dov actually pointed out to me on Shabbos that the V'chashach Tava is one of only two places in Torah where we find the phrase that a man desires a woman with the word Cheshek. That's right. You know something about this? You don't know. I'm looking for a drasha. Exactly. By Shechem, yeah. So that's the other situation by Shechem and Dina where he says, I don't know, chashakti, what is that? Is that the word, chashakti? I don't know what the form of the word is, but that's the only other place, apparently. You know, Dov has memorized the Concordancia, and that's what he came up with. And yeah, a cheshek is a desire. But those are the only two times in Torah. So maybe next year we'll talk about what those two things have to do with. Maybe the Shabbos will come up with something. I doubt it, but maybe. So the pasuk is v'chashak tava, you wanted her as a wife, v'lakachta l'chal ishma, and you took her as a wife. What's interesting about the word v'lakachta v'lachal isha, this is really a preamble to the source of marrying a woman, which is later in the parsha. Ki yikach ish isha, which we learn from there, how to acquire a woman or how to betroth a woman, and very interesting stuff. We could have talked about that today also, but we're not going to. A lot of stuff we're not going to talk about that we're talking about. V'havesa al toch b'secha, you're going to bring her into your house. V'gilcha es rosha, you're going to cut off her hair. V'asasa tziparna, you're going to make her nails, you're going to do her nails. But some, there are different interpretations, if I remember correctly, why are you doing all these things? Either to make her beautiful or to make her not so beautiful, in which case you wouldn't want to be with her. It depends how who you're going to, which parish you're going to look at. You're going to bring her to the house, you're going to change her clothes, and she's going to cry over the fact that she's not with her parents for a month. And after that period where she gets over herself and she calms down, so then you can take her as a wife. And let's say you realize you don't want to do this anymore. You send her away. You're not allowed to sell her. Which is translated here, has the art scroll translated. You are not allowed to
enslave her?
Yeah. You should not enslave her. Is that what it says here? No, you should not sell her for money. You shall not enslave her because you have afflicted her. Right? You have... Yeah, one of the longest aliyahs in all of Bereishis. I remember that. Because there was a Shabbaton and I had to lay in, whatever. The whole story that you don't need to know at all. But the pasuk here is saying that shall send her on her own, but you shouldn't sell her, and you shouldn't enslave her. That's a weird way to say that you should enslave her. Let me just check if Rashi says anything. I don't remember. No. Okay. So you shouldn't enslave her because you've done enough, right? Tachas asher inisa. Ina ota, right? You have afflicted her. You've done something bad to her, and you've done enough, basically. So that's right. Yeah. There are a lot of questions on this, but you can have one.
In the second
passage,
it says he already took her for a wife.
Okay. So good.
Again.
So v'lokach talachalisha. And it is one, and then the other one is uva alta v'hisal chalisha. So these are really the two stages of marriage, what we would nowadays call engagement and then marriage, but in more literal terms, or more, I guess, accurate terms in Jewish terminology, it would be betrothal and marriage. Engagement is not really, doesn't have the full weight of betrothal. In Jewish law, for halacha, so betrothal, kiddushin as we call it, or erusin as we call it, is much more, I guess, exclusionary, right? You've taken this person as your future wife, you're not fully married yet, but you are off limits to anybody else, right? The truth is that nowadays, it used to be that these two things were done a year apart from each other. You'd have the betrothal, and then you'd have the marriage. Nowadays, how long do we wait between betrothal and marriage? As long as it takes to read the ksuba, right? As long as it takes. Whoever's reading the ksuba, that depends how long it's going to be. Because we do it right away, obviously for emotional reasons, for modern reasons, the way the culture works nowadays. But so that's presumably what's going on here also, the difference between the two situations.
Isn't it very hard to break
an
engagement at that time?
You mean a Jewish betrothal?
Yeah.
I mean, there are things that you have to give a get, right? You have to give a form of a release document in order, even just for the engagement, right? Which is, again, why it's not the same thing as engagement that we call nowadays. So this is obviously a very peculiar situation. Guy goes out to war, he's got a bunch of captives, finds a woman that he likes among the captives, brings her into his house, maybe it doesn't work out, sends her out of the house, no money, no nothing. Very strange. What's going on? So if you look at Rashi, if you look in the bottom here at Rashi, you could also see in your source sheets in source number 2. So Rashi tells us in the next spot, v'lakachta l'cha li'isha, in Pasuk Bet, that would be in the Chumash, 4 lines down. Rashi says, v'lakachta l'cha li'isha, lo dibra Torah ela keneged yetzer hara. The Torah here is talking about, or in accordance to, our evil inclination, meaning men's evil inclination. She'im in HaKadosh Baruch Hu matira yisa'ena be'iser. This is theologically fascinating to me, which is why I said one of the most interesting mitzvahs that we have. If the Torah would not have said that you're allowed to take this woman, if the Torah wouldn't have, or Hashem wouldn't have given us the allowance to take this woman, so then you would have married her in transgression, right? It says, Yisa ena be'isr. You would marry her anyway. So the Torah says, I know you're going to do it anyway. Better you should do it with my stamp of approval than you should do it with my prohibition. It's kind of interesting because there are a lot of things that maybe someone would say, I want to do this. I want to eat a cheeseburger. Why doesn't the Torah say I can eat cheeseburgers? But for some reason, on this mitzvah specifically, we have this allowance to treat our desires. Aval imnasa, says Rashi. The truth is, Hashem allows you. Aval imnasa, if you do actually marry her, sofo liyos son'a, you'll ultimately end up hating her. Shenamar acharav ki siena leish, because the next parsha talks about, we'll read it in a second, talks about, well, first is the mother with two, I think the next one is, you've got two children, one wife you don't like, one wife you do like. And then, the holy men of Ben Sora Moreh, you're going to have a wayward son, l'kach nismichu parshios halalu. That's why these parshas are connected to each other. What is that next part? So you see, we just mentioned, kisena l'ishtei nashim, ha'achas ahava v'achas nua. Back then, it used to be, you could have two wives. Nowadays, you're not allowed to anymore for a long time. And you have one boy from each wife. Ha'ava v'achas nua v'haya ben ha'bachor l'asniya. But the firstborn was to the wife you didn't like as much. So you say, maybe, v'haya b'hanchilo asbanav eis asher yelo. It's going to come to your deathbed, and you're going to have to figure out who's going to get the Bechor. You don't have to figure it out. You want to give the Bechor to really your second son, who from your love, the woman you love. And apnei ben asnua Bechor, you're not going to want it to give it to the son from the hated wife. Ki ha-Bechor ben asnua yakir l'aseis lo pishnayim Bechor ha-shimaseibo. You still have to give it to the rightful firstborn. Ki hu reishis ano lo mishbat ha-Bechor, because that was your first, giving of your strength. And therefore, he gets the firstborn rights. Now, obviously, there might be some, historical connotations with this parsha, right? Obviously, with Yaakov and Esav and that entire debate and episode. But this is the halacha. The halacha is, all else being equal, you don't have any Ruach HaKodesh telling you otherwise. You always give it to the firstborn, no matter what the situation is, no matter who, what wife you like, what wife you don't like, always goes to the firstborn of the father. And then, so that's what Rashi says. Rashi says, if you marry this woman, it's going to lead to one of these types of situations. And then what else is going to lead to, as we said before, ki yel ish ben soreru moreh. This child that comes from this woman is going to come, this child is going to be very rebellious. He's not going to listen to the father and the mother. Now, what's very interesting to me about this in terms of parental discipline is the fact that what would be so bad about this child listening? Why isn't this child listening to his father and his mother? Right? And why doesn't the pasuk say not listening to his parents? Why does it say his father and his mother? Presumably, one could make the case, and I don't know if I've seen this somewhere or not, but it's in my head, so you can take it or leave it. But one could say that the problem with this child is not necessarily with the child, but with the mixed messages at home, right? If we're going to take this Rashi to the logical extreme, so what's happening basically is you've got this wife who you don't like, you don't get along with, and you're trying to raise a child together. So how are you going to raise a child if you yourselves can't get along? You're going to say this kid can stay up late. The wife's going to say no. You're going to say you can eat this. The wife's going to say no. The wife's going to say you can do this. You're going to say no. Every day, you're fighting over what the child can do. Naturally, this child's going to just stop listening to you. Every single time he has to ask anything, you guys are fighting about what he has to do. So he's going to stop listening altogether. So presumably, that's what's running behind in the background. He's not going to listen to either one of you. You say this, they say that, you're going to end up losing all of it. And you try to discipline him, and it's not working. He's not going to listen to you. And then you go through the whole the circumstance, which we've said never exists, never happens, that the child is going to be put to death because of the end in sight, because of what's going to be in the end of the day. So these are the three parshas until we get to the second aliyah that Rashi tells us all stem from this one episode where the person sees a captive woman and feels the need to take her as a wife. Rashi says, it's true, the Torah says you can do it. Go for it. But it's on your own, tab about what you're going to have to pay for. Because this woman's going to come with a lot of baggage. So what's interesting about this Rashi? Right, so Rashi starts and says, why are you, so it's not a good thing to marry the woman. You can do it, it's not good. It's going to lead to bad things. What's going to lead, how do we know it's going to lead to bad things? Because it's connected to other things. What are the things it's connected to? It's connected to the Bechor situation, you're going to have to give to a Bechor, and it's also connected to the Ben Sorer Umoreh. So if you look at your sheets, I quoted here, the Shem Yishmuel. Who was the Shem Yishmuel? Anyone know? What do you say? I told you before, okay? The Shem Yishmuel is known as the Sakachavar. Sakachavar Rebbe, son of the Avnei Nezer, and who was the son-in-law of the Kutzker Rebbe. He comes from Pshischa, a little bit of disconnect, but comes from Pshischa. Their last name was Borenstein. And the Shem Yishmuel, do we have a Shem Yishmuel? Miriam, write this down on the list. One of the things we could use is a Shem Yishmuel. I don't know if we'll get to it, but... He is the second Shever, son of the first second Shever, the Avnei Nezer, Rav Avram Borenstein. He's Rav Shmuel Borenstein, as you can tell from his Sefer. And the Shem Yishmuel is really a mix. Second Shev is known, especially coming from Pshischa, is known for having a great balance between the sort of Talmudic erudition, right, the analysis, and the very serious Limud HaTorah, and also the Hasidic end, right, from Pshischa, that also comes through. And what you see from the Shem Yishmuel is a sort of a very keen analysis of the text, a keen analysis of the themes of the Torah, but also a certain, sophistication in terms of making homiletics, bringing homiletics out of the text. So in this situation, he asks a very simple question on Rashi. He says the following. I don't know if you can read this print here, but I'll read it out loud. Smichus aparshios shel yifas Torah ben Sorah Moreh, kas of Rashi, she'im nasa yifas Torah, if you're going to marry this woman, sofu l'holi b'mena ben Sorah Umoreh, you're going to end up having a child who's going to be a wayward son. V'yesh l'havin, my shaychus yesh l'parshios nachlas ha'bechor be'emtza. Says the Shem Yishmuel, okay, I understand it's going to have bad consequences later on. When the child grows up and you're trying to discipline him. But what's really the consequence of the Nachlos? I know that sequentially it might come out of this, but what's the thematic connection between them? This halacha is independent of the story, right? So you go through the story, you marry this wife, and then you have to have a child that's going to be a wayward son. But the thing in the middle doesn't really fit, right? What's the thing, what's the parsha in the middle is about when you're going to be at the end of your life, you're going to have to give out the Bechor. By the way, you have to give it to that Bechor. So that's...
necessarily the son, it could be to stop people.
Yeah, anyone has to do that. Yeah, it doesn't have to be, yeah, and this is not necessarily a consequence that's specific to this situation.
Right.
So why is the halacha of a Bechor, or the Bechora, why is that coming in between these two episodes? It's not necessarily something that someone's comfortable with, that he wants to give the Bechor, but the Bechor is the Bechor. So the Torah is just coming to tell us, by the way, it's Bechor, and you have to give it to him. But it doesn't necessarily follow in terms of the consequences of your action by marrying this woman. It's something that could happen. It's not something that will happen. And it's certainly an independent halacha, which is not necessarily a bad thing. The halacha is the halacha. So the Shem Yishmuel asked this question, V'zeh limud gadol, says the Shem Yishmuel, this is coming to teach us something very, very important. L'chol Adam. Actually, let's hold off on this part. Does anyone have any ideas? Does anyone have any suggestions? What do you think? Why is the parsha of the Bechor in between these two parshas?
Well, in a way, it might go back to his fantasy, to the Astora.
Yeah.
Initially, she's not even Jewish.
Mm-hmm. Right, you don't know her family, right?
And he's just acting when he just hates her. She's not Jewish either.
Right. He's acting impulsively, just on the desire, not really thinking about it too much. Yeah.
And so maybe the son inherits some of her
Interesting. So where the connection to the inheritance in the physical sense, you're saying, is a connection of the inheritance on a personality sense also. That it's indicative of the inheritance more than just the Bechor inheritance. Interesting. Okay. Very interesting. I'm trying to think about it within the words. So you could say, if you want to get really, really homiletical here, you could say that that's something you can't take back, right? The concept of that you're always going to give the Bechor to the Ben Hasnua, to the hated wife. That's something that you can't get out of. And just like, you know, genetics and personality traits and, you know, what you give over to a child in a natural sense is something that's automatic. So maybe there's something to work with there. Okay, good. What else? Any other ideas why this Bechor is in the middle, the Parsha of Bechor?
It could be not just from the mother's side, but the father's acting impulsively.
Okay.
And we see that the wayward son is also very impulsive.
Right.
In his actions
with... Sure, yeah. That's a genetic thing also. Interesting, you see that too. Okay, good. So what does the Shem Yishmael say? Shem Yishmael in that left column. V'zeh limud gadol l'chol adam. It's a longer piece. The Shem Yishmael usually speaks at length. And I just picked this out for you. V'zeh limud gadol l'chol adam l'hashkiach hetev al reishis shelo. That everyone has to be very scrupulous to see their beginnings. Al hareishis shelo. Reishis ba'o l'chal mitzvos b'yoso ben gimel. Right when you're going to come in to your bar mitzvah. V'chein b'yoso adam shalim al yedei ha'nesuin. And similarly when you're starting off in a marriage together. Az matchila tzekufa chadasha v'yashgiach hetev hetev al reishis shenosav az. Says the Shem Yishmael, what is the common denominator in all of these stories, all of these episodes? The common denominator is beginnings. The common denominator is beginnings. What does that mean, the beginnings? So here you see the beginning of taking a wife. Then you see the beginning of one's children in terms of the Bechor. And then you see the beginnings. Right? And then you see the beginnings of the person or this child's would-be adulthood. Right? Because we know that the Ben Sora Mora happens right at the time of Bar Mitzvah. 12 and a half to 13, that's when you figure out, which is part of why it's so difficult to ever find the Ben Sora Mora, which a lot of the Gemara says never happens. Obviously, there are a lot of other conditions too, but it also has to happen specifically at this time of Bar Mitzvah. So same says the Shem Yishmael, the common theme between these three parshas, the reason that they're all connected together is not only because they could be potential consequences of that original decision, but because they're all beginnings. The first is the beginning of taking a wife, in marriage. The second is the beginning of your Bechor, your firstborn, your first child, how you're going to raise your children at the very beginning. And then you have the beginning of adulthood for this child. Everyone knows, maybe for some people it's further back in their memory, but maybe you have friends or family that's going through it also, that the first child is always, you know, you're putting everything you have into it. All of your energy is into that first kid. Right, it's the most pictures, it's the most strict discipline, you know, you read the most books on parenting for the first kid, and then all of a sudden the second kid, everything goes out the window, and then all of a sudden you're not following the rules you once set out for yourself, you're not keeping the same diet, you're not keeping to even the 5-second rule anymore, and it basically everything goes out the window after the first kid.
There's a great advertisement for, I don't even remember what it's for, but there's a parent with a baby and she's interviewing somebody. Do you have a PhD? I have a master's. And then by the time the second child comes, okay, here's the telephone number. She just
to any random person.
Right. It just is.
That's the middle part. That's the Bechor. Your Bechor is the one you put all of your energies into. And by the way, this is also very relevant in terms of the halachos of respecting older siblings. I don't know if you know that there is such a halacha, that you have to respect all your older sibling, but there is a machlokas about this halacha, whether or not it applies to any older sibling, or does it only apply to the oldest sibling. So the reasoning for that is because of this, because the parents put all of their kochos into that first child. The parents said, this is going to be our ideal, you know, one to carry on the legacy of our parenting. All the other ones, okay, they can learn from him. They can learn from her. But this first one, all onto us. We're putting all of our energies. So that's why some people say that the machlokas there is only one of the sides of the machlokas is to only respect your oldest sibling. We can talk about that maybe in Shabbos afternoon shiur. Very fascinating stuff. But either way, so what we find here in terms of beginnings or in terms of starting something new, whether it's a marriage, child rearing, or adulthood for a child. So what we find is a concept we see in other places that kol haschalos kashos, right? The beginnings are always difficult, and that's why they're so important, right? If they weren't difficult, they wouldn't be that important. So says the parsha tells us later on, and we're going to get on a little bit of a tangent here, but we'll come back. We will circle back. Ki kare kan sipor lefanecha badarach. This would be in, if you're in a Chumash, it would be on page 1050. 1050 in the middle, Pasuk Vav. The sixth Pasuk. Ki kare kan sipor lefanecha. When you find a bird's nest, or you just happen upon a bird's nest. Baderech b'chol eitz o al haaretz, in a tree or on the ground, efrochim o beitzim, you find actual chicks or you find actual eggs. V'ha'im rovetzes al efrochim, and the mother is on top of the eggs, o al beitzim, on top of the chicks or on top of the eggs. Lo sigach ha'im al abam, you can't just take the mother away. Shaleach t'shalach es ha'im, you can't just take the eggs while the mother's there. You have to send away the mother. So that it will be good for you and you will have long days. One of the most peculiar mitzvahs that we have, but obviously, I shouldn't say obviously, there is an element of mercifulness in it, although the Gemara tells us that we can't really talk about it that way, but some of the part in the Farshim do talk about it that way. It's a whole big thing whether we can look into this mitzvah and explain why Hashem wants to do it. So I'm not going to do it here, but I believe the Ramban does talk about it. Either way, so why do I bring it up here? If you look at Rashi, Rashi tells us the following on Pasuk, probably the end there, Pasuk Zion, if I had to guess. But where is it? Zion. In the middle of Rashi, it's hard to say. It's probably like 9 lines down or something. Laman yitav lecha im mitzvah kala she'ein bach yisaron kis. Amra Torah, Laman Yitzav Lecha V'Harach LeYamim. If for an easy mitzvah, we've seen this term before in this class, for an easy mitzvah, the Torah tells us it'll be good for you and it will bring you long days. Kavachom L'Matzon Scharn Shal Mitzvos Chamiros. All the more so for mitzvahs that are difficult. We've spoken before about an easy mitzvah. What was the easy mitzvah we spoke about before? Eating bugs, right? Or not drinking blood. Right, we spoke about both of those a couple weeks ago. So was that a couple weeks ago or last week?
No, I think it was 2 weeks ago because I wasn't here last week.
And you remember
the story about
maybe you just know things. Okay, so we've talked about it. What is an easy mitzvah? So here says Rashi, this is also an easy mitzvah. What's so easy about it? What would you say is so easy about this mitzvah?
You don't have an inclination to do it, so you're not going to do it. It's not something that you want to do.
Okay.
It's and disgusting. That's so hard.
It's not so common. That makes it easier or harder?
Easier. You don't have to deal with that on a daily basis.
Okay. It doesn't require a consistent amount of work. I guess it's easy in that sense. What else?
Something you could understand.
Okay. You can relate to the concept of mercy. Yeah. Okay, good.
It's easier to take the eggs or the chicks if the mother isn't fighting with you.
Right. Well, I guess that would be situational. If that happens, then it would be easy. But that's not always going to happen, right? So that could be true. So the Imre Emes, who is the Imre Emes? The Imre Emes was Rav Avram, the Ger Rebbe, Rav Avram Alter. He's not on here, but so if you look at source number 6, the Yerushalmi tells us the following. Amar bi Aber, Amar bi Kana, Hishva Kasav Mitzvah Kala. This is what Rashi is referring to a little bit, but it has a little bit more. Mitzvah kal shebekal zeh shiluach hakan, or a kain. U'mitzvah chamur shebechamur zeh kibud avaim. U'vishteyen kasiv v'harach tayamim. So Rashi really only brings half of this drasha. So what is the easy mitzvah? That's sending away the bird. What's the hardest mitzvah? Kibud avaim. So everyone has their own interpretation of this in their own life. But Kibbud Av V'Ein is considered one of the hardest mitzvahs. Why is that considered the hardest mitzvah? And why is this considered the easiest mitzvah?
There's no emotional attachment.
To the bird. Yeah, you have nothing. Oh, good. Good. There's an ease to it because you don't know this bird. You've never seen it before. You just send it away. Happens to be that I knew someone in Kansas who used to have birds on their deck. And they would say, like, they grew attached to these birds because they would just live. They would come every morning to their deck. They even named the bird and everything. And after a while, they realized the bird wasn't coming back after a long time. They got all worried. But it wasn't the right kind of bird, and it didn't have eggs, so it wasn't relevant for this. But, okay, so there's no emotional attachment, right? No emotional, as opposed to a parent, there is an emotional attachment. The difference, however, is that when it comes to a bird, the lack of emotional attachment is helping you because you are able to send it away. That's what makes it easy. But the emotional attachment for a parent is also helping you because you want to help them. Right? So it's not an opposite. That's...
Unless you resent them.
Right. In which case, there's different types of emotions. Mm-hmm. So what else? What else about... what about the distinction about the bird between the bird and the parent, which makes it one easy and the other hard? Any other ideas? Yeah. Right. Yeah. It is what we call mitzvah kiyumis. It's something that you can do. It's not something you're obligated to, as opposed to a parent. Under normal circumstances, you're obligated in it. You're right. You're right. But that's also somewhat situational. If your parents never ask you for anything, or you don't know who your parents are, so there's nothing you can do. So I guess there is, in some ways, but I would say that we typically categorize Kibbud Av V'Ein as an obligatory mitzvah. So that's right. That's a difference.
Well, Shiloh HaKan is a one-time thing.
Mm-hmm. Right, so Rain was saying that, yeah.
Could be a lifelong...
Good. The bird happens once, presumably, unless it comes back. And the parents, you have to do, you know, you have to help them for your entire life. So that's definitely true. That makes it easy versus hard, because it's instantaneous versus ongoing.
And
yeah, what else?
The directions, what to do, is very specific.
Okay. There are some gray areas within Kibbud Av V'Ein, but typically it's pretty straightforward. They ask you to do something, you gotta do it. But it does depend. Sometimes there are machloksim about who has to pay for things for the parent, right? So you have to go buy something for your parent. So who pays for it? Right? Whose money is required in order to fulfill the mitzvah? So it's machloksim in the Gemara. I think we pasken that it's the parents' money. Sorry for the parents in the room. And maybe you're already familiar with this concept. I know that for my in-laws, we have a minhag that for their anniversary, we buy them something with their money. It's not a real minhag. It's just that we want to get them something and we don't want to pay for it. Now that we're older and the family has jobs and everything like that, so now we pay for it. But it used to be when we were first starting that we would get them things on their own dime.
It's not as necessary today.
Yeah.
The elderly parents have Social Security.
Yeah, there's a lot more help for the elderly now than there used to be.
They're much more independent.
Right, that could be, yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's definitely true. But that doesn't absolve any children from their obligations.
No.
It just helps them out to do.
Today what most parents want is to hear from their children.
That could be good. Yeah, Baruch Hashem for children. Baruch Hashem for conversations with children, and children that live nearby is very helpful too.
That's it. And how many
yeah.
have that?
Yeah, yeah. So when it comes to the mitzvah of Kibbud Av V'Ein, so it is a little maybe there are some gray areas, but it is pretty straightforward, just like this mitzvah. So when it comes, I remember there's a story, by the way. I think the Rav Chaim Brisker was once approached by a student. And the student said to him, my father wants me to go visit him, but I have to take the train. And I don't want to pay for the train, and he doesn't want to pay for the train. Can you please tell him that he has to pay for the train? Because the Gemara tells us that you have to, that the father is responsible for a child's mitzvah of Kibbud Av V'Ein. So the Brisker Rav says back to him, you can walk. Right, so it's also a gray area about what exactly someone has to pay for, what's a necessary payment, but either way.
Not a Jewish father.
So what is the difference between these? So the Imre Emes, Rav Avram Igor, Rav Avram Alter, the son of the Sfas Emes, so he has the following proposition. And he says the difference between the Ki Kore Kan Sipor and the Kibud Av Ha'Em is a difference of preparation. What do you have to do when it comes to the Ki Kore Kan Sipor? You're not really allowed to prepare for it. It has to be happenstance. You have to be just walking along the road and happen to see it. It's not clear that you're allowed to do it in any deliberate fashion. If you know the bird's around, you have to go find it and do it. It's not necessarily the way the Torah wants it to be done. The Imre Emes then says that it's not the case when it comes to Kibud Av Ha'Em. Why is it not the case for Kibud Av Ha'Em? So somewhat connected to what Esther was saying before, Kibud Av Ha'Em requires an emotional component. What's the emotional component of Kibud Av Ha'Em? So we see the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin Daf Lamed, Tani Rabbi Omer, Galoi v'yadu levnei misha amar v'haya olam she ben mechabed es imo yoser mi aviv. That a son or a child has more honor for a mother than they do for a father. Because she is the one that really put in all the effort for him. Is that what it says over here in the English? What does it say? Because she persuades him with many statements of encouragement. Okay. She sort of talks to him and is sensitive to him. When the pasuk says "kabed es avicha v'yasimecha," so it says the father first when it comes to honoring your father. Why? Because it's natural to honor your mother. And when it comes to an instruction, Hashem says, "Make sure you honor your father and obviously your mother." Your mother, you can do. The father, you have to make sure to do. Obviously, it depends on the father. Depends on the mother. But then it says the following also. That a child is more fearful of a father than of a mother. Obviously, there are exceptions. But, and because he teaches him Torah, I'm not sure why that instills fear, but I guess in general we know the father figure, disciplinarian type. Therefore, the Torah says, as avich asimecha, what's the pasuk? Ish imo v'aviv tiro. That's right. Ish imo v'aviv tiro. It's interesting that it comes in the opposite order, but the order for the parents is also different. That the father and the mother you shall fear. The mother and the father you shall fear, because the mother is the one that maybe you don't have as much of a natural inclination to fear. So it says the Gemara Kedusha says that sort of developing these two traits, these two emotions towards your parents is something you have to work on. It's not natural. Or maybe it's more natural in one way, it's less natural in the other, but it's something you have to work on. So it says the Imre Emes, based on this Gemara, and based on the Zohar that uses a father and a mother as the paradigms for fear and for honor. So the Gemara tells us, and the Imre Emes tells us, that those are things that require a lot of work, a lot of effort, a lot of preparation. The Or HaChaim then says on our parsha, "V'risa b'ashevya isha sifas toar yerach yamim ze shir hamaspik leishiv." That's the amount of time you have to sit and you let her sit for a month. Oh, yirmos lechodesh hamiyucha letshuva. Or it's not talking about any random month, but it's talking about a specific month of Elul, and that is the month that we are miyucha. That's miyucha letshuva. If you look at the I don't know why I didn't bring it here, but if you look in Unculus, I think it's in Unculus. Let me just see. Where is it? It doesn't say it here. Maybe it's... No, I think it's the other Targum. Yerushalmi. It's not here. But the Targum Yonason also says that as Aviv as Imo Yerach Yamim is referring to Elul, and therefore Aviv Imo is referring to your father not only in the physical world but also in the spiritual world. That this is the month of Elul that we're working on our fear of Hashem, our parents in heaven. We also sit and we cry for Hashem. So this is also part of the calculation of this month. And if you look at the source number 9, it's not only the sort of the clues in the verse that are telling us this, but even the Gemara tells us this. The same daf in Kedushin says, "Tan Rabbanu Nemar Kavdis Vech Vesimecha V'Nemar Kavdis Hashem Mehoncha Hishva Kasev Kavod Av Ve'Aim LeKavod Amakom." That your honor and your father and your honor and your fear of a father and mother is the same or is parallel to your honor and your fear of Hashem in heaven. So how does that sort of help us out in our discussion today? Because what we're talking about today, first, is the month of Elul, and it's the month of this Yifas Toar, this woman who was taken captive, who has to sit for a month and cry for her father and mother that she now misses in the month of Elul. So too we cry for her father and mother, which translates to Hashem in the month of Elul. But how does that help us back to the Imre Emes, back to this question about the Yifas Toar and beginnings? So if you look in Shmos, so the pasuk says, "Va'atayim shamoa tishmeu b'koli shmartem es receive yisem liskul mikol ha'amim ki li kol ha'aretz." That the Jewish people are going to be for Hashem and you're going to be treasured, etc. Rashi says, "Imata tekablo aleichem, if you will accept upon yourself the mitzvos, yerav lachem mikan ve'elach. Then, if you're going to do it now, get over the hump, you're going to accept it, as difficult as it might be, yerav lachem mikan ve'elach. It'll get better and better, get sweeter and sweeter." And says Rashi, why? Shekol haschalos kashos. Because the beginning is always the hardest. So, how do we come full circle on this? So we remember what we've been talking about when it comes to Kikari Khan Sipur, is the easiest mitzvah, and Kibbud Av Ve'Em is the hardest mitzvah. Why? Because of the difficulty that goes into it. Right? Before you can actually go through with honoring your father and your mother, you have to put effort in to respect them. You have to put effort in to honor them, to fear them. And when we talk about the beginnings, this is what we're also talking about. The beginnings, where we have to actually put in the effort, is the hardest part. And that's what the Jewish people were told by Moshe Rabbeinu at the beginning of nationhood. So now, we're coming back to the Shem Yishmuel. Says the Shem Yishmuel, these three episodes, Yifas Toar, the Bechor, and the Ben Sora Remora, are all beginnings. And they all have difficult decisions to be made. This person who's taking a woman into his house has a captive woman. She's a beautiful woman. He's trying to say, "I should take her. I shouldn't take her. I should take her. I shouldn't take her." Says the Shem Yishmuel, you have to be very careful with your beginning decisions. It requires a lot of work, and it oftentimes comes with a certain sense of ease. If you're able to make the easy decision, so it will lead to bad things down the road. If you make the difficult decision at the beginning, it will lead to better things down the road too, which is what Rashi says, "Kol haschalos kashos, but yerav aleichem mikan ve'elach." That if you do it now, you work on it now, so it'll be better later. Right? Imagine the Jewish people in the Midbar. They're starting off and they're saying, "Oh my gosh, this Torah, 613 mitzvos. How am I ever going to do all of that? Why would I take that?" So Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, "No, don't worry. Accept it. That's the hard part. But once you accept it, it'll get easier and easier." I mentioned in a drasha a few weeks ago, I think it was a few weeks ago, the concept of Dave Ramsey, the concept of the debt snowball. You remember this? Anyone was there? The debt snowball, who he says that if you have a bunch of different debts, the Shabbos drasha, and you have a smaller amount of debt, and then you have a bigger amount of debt, and the interest rates work out that you should pay off the bigger one first, mathematically. So Dave Ramsey is a big proponent of the fact, no, you should pay off the smaller one first, because that will get you going. Because if you try to tackle the big one, even if the interest rate is bigger and you should pay it off mathematically first, it's going to still feel so hard. It's going to feel insurmountable. Pay off the smaller one as fast as you can, and then you'll feel good about yourself, and it'll keep going. So there's a similar concept brought up about the five-minute, I don't know if it's called the five-minute miracle, the five-minute cleaning miracle of a person who has a messy house. How are you going to clean your house? You look at your house, and there's so much everywhere. How are you ever going to get to it? You look at it, and you say, "Oh, I'm just not going to do it." You say, "I'm going to start to do it. This time I'm going to do it. I'd rather eat a longer dinner. I'd rather watch a TV show. I'd rather, you know, listen to a shiur. I'd rather talk to my children. I'd rather do anything else but clean my house. It's too big. So the trick is to say to yourself, I'm only going to clean for 5 minutes. I'm only going to clean to 5 minutes. If you remember, we talked then in the drasha about the elephant, the rider and the elephant. We won't go through the whole imagery now. But all you have to do is shorten the path, shorten the distance, make a very small goal. Say, I'm going to do it for 5 minutes, and then that's it. What you'll realize is, at the end of 5 minutes, it's not that bad. You'll say, oh, I can do another 5 minutes. I can do another 10 minutes. I can finish this room. And then all of a sudden, you started by saying, I'm only going to do 5 minutes. But you really have to believe, I'm only going to do 5 minutes. At the end of the 5 minutes, you'll realize it's not so bad. At the beginning, it feels really hard. It feels really difficult. This is the trick I play on myself when I'm on the treadmill also. Right? I tell myself, I'm going to run 2 miles. You know, 1 mile, whatever the day, different days, different situations. But I say, 1 mile. At the end of 1 mile, I'm like, this is not so bad. I can go another 1/2 mile. And then ultimately, I end up running 3 miles.
Wow.
You know, eventually, you know, on a good day. But that's the same thing. You set a goal, and by the end of the goal, you say, good, I've conquered that goal. You're able to, again, go through it with the goal because you didn't see it as an insurmountable challenge. And then you'll be able to continue. The same thing is true here. Says Hashem Yishmuel, Limud gadol l'chol adam l'hashkiach hetev al reishis shelo. You have to be very discerning, very deliberating when it comes to your beginnings. When it comes to the beginnings, reishis bo l'chol mitzvos, when you become bar mitzvah, you have to make sure you're starting off on the right foot. It might be very difficult. A girl turns 12 years old, all of a sudden, all these mitzvos you have to do. But push through that first week, that first month, that first year, and you'll realize it'll get easier from there. Kol haschalos kashos, but that's why they're the most important. They're difficult, and as my dad would say, when I used to practice basketball, different sports, my father would always say, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. Right? The reason something is important is because it's difficult. The important things in life are difficult, and it's all about that beginning, that first step. I remember when I was a Sholem Yeshiva, a rabbinic assistant in NYU, I would schmooze with the guys, get a relationship with them, and one of the guys would tell me, some of the guys would always complain about all their homework. You know, I couldn't come in to shiur yesterday because of my homework. And one of the other guys would say to them, I've figured out how to do my homework. I just say, it's about the first minute. All I have to do is homework for the first minute, and then I can do the rest of my homework. It's all about starting. Once you're able to start, you can go on from there. And the truth is, it's such a foundational principle in everything we do. I can tell you that when I have a good chakras in the morning, the rest of my day is a very different day. If I have difficulty concentrating, if I'm not davening well, so it'll continue for the rest of the day. Right? It's all about how you wake up. You wake up, you go wash negel vasa right away. You're focused. You're in it. You're having kavana with your brachos. It changes the rest of the day. The rest of the day is a much more easier feat. And says the Shem Yishmuel, the same thing is true when it comes to this parsha. This guy, at the beginning, took his wife, and then everything just snowballed from there. He took a wife he didn't like, or he wouldn't like, because his desire, he wasn't thinking difficultly, he wasn't making the hard decision, he was making the easy decision, and that leads to the Bechor situation, where the first child is not going to be an easy situation. And you're going to try to raise this child, and it's not going to be good, because you started off on the wrong foot. And then the child's going to be bar mitzvah, and he's also not going to be in a good situation at his beginning. And he's not going to be able to overcome that beginning, overcome that first heap. Maybe it's genetic, maybe it's not genetic, I don't know. But says the Shem Yishmuel, this is all thematic. These are all beginnings in life where we have to make that first decision, that difficult decision. But once we can make, and once we can sort of overcome our instincts, overcome the easy decision to make the difficult decision, so then the rest of the decisions come much easier. And it just snowballs and snowballs, and before you know it, you'll be finished your homework. Before you know it, you'll be running 3 miles. Before you know it, you'll clean your whole house. And before you know it, you'll be out of debt. It's all about the beginning. And obviously what we're talking about here is the beginning of the year. The beginning of the year is the month of Elul. We all have to work very hard and very deliberately on what's going to be in a few weeks on Rosh Hashanah. Because oftentimes what happens is we forget Rosh Hashanah is coming, we're busy with when Rosh Hashanah is coming, and Rosh Hashanah just ends up coming. It's just at our door, whether we like it or not. And You know, if we're not going to prepare for it, we're not going to do the work like kibud av va'em, to put in the effort, to put in the preparation. So ultimately, when Rosh Hashanah comes, we'll see an insurmountable hurdle to overcome. But if we prepare for it now, we try to make our mind ready to prepare for it, not only by getting our apples and getting our honey, but also making sure that we're vachsa esavia vesima yerach yamim, that we use this month of Elul to cry over our connection to Hashem, that our parent that we miss. So hopefully when Rosh Hashanah comes, we'll be able to take it in stride, to go forward, and not only have a wonderful and influential Rosh Hashanah for Rosh Hashanah's time and for Yom Kippur time, but also for the rest of the year, we'll be able to use that beginning, that Haschalos Kashos, that difficult beginning, that we've made the right decision, the hard decision, and we'll be able to carry that through for the rest of the year and have a wonderful year of Avodas Hashem and hopefully enjoyable life with the right values. Okay. Shall be well. Thanks for coming.
Got the roll in there.
Yeah.